absolutely.
Yeah.
And Spencer.
Spencer, Jimmy Spencer.
Jim Spencer, man.
Goodness,
we'll miss Jim Spencer.
We'll definitely come on to
what him, a mate. Horrible bloke he was.
Welcome to the second episode of Under the Abbey Stand. This week, we talk about the U's past few games, the return of Luke Berry to the Abbey, and address the football Jenga controversy from last time. I'm your host, Jack Swindlehurst. Joining me today, Tom Walker, back in the studio again.
Yep, good to be back. Action-packed show we've got lined up.
Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about. Julian Roberts.
Hello, mate.
Present. How are you?
Thank you. Unfortunately so. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Cold. Snowy.
Cold and snowy. Andrew Georgeson, Cambridge United reporter for the Cambridge News, joins us in the studio. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having us, guys. Nice to be here.
It's going to be a good show today, and yeah, there's a lot to talk about. First things first, gents. We're going to talk chronologically about Notts County, the Notts County game, Cambridge United. What do you think of the game, first off?
First of all, it's such a big 3 points for United, especially at the time it was when Joe Dunn's third game in charge and his third victory on the bounce against, I mean, promotion chasers, and we restricted them to not a single shot on target. It was so comfortable the whole evening, I thought. I was never in any doubt. It was such a nice performance. It was just such a great performance, I thought.
Yeah, and I think it was important because it was the first of this six-game run which they went on, and everyone was like, oh, we can do it against easy games. Is this just going to be the same Sean Devy situation of kind of doing okay but ultimately losing? And, you know, you have seen it has kind of created this little run they've went on. But I think an important thing is just how thoroughly unconvincing Notts County actually are. In the times I've seen them this season, it is unbelievable.
I think this is a big point. I mean, I know we ended up drawing last time, but we were 3-0 up at their place. And their home record at the time was exceptional. And then they come down here, and I just don't think as good as John Stead and Shola Amiobi were on Football Manager 2004.
Yeah,
they're like, ancient.
Two strikers of the average age of 35, I just don't think it's gonna bring them up.
Yeah, it just seems like sort of chronic short-termism with them. Like, if they go up, what are we going to do? Shola Amiobi will be 36, John Stead will be 35, but a lot of their team's quite old. I was looking at this before, and you think, you know, what's the planning here? What's Kevin Nolan thinking? Is it just horses for courses and getting them up and reinvesting? But yeah, I've seen them 3 times, and we conceded 3 goals against us when we couldn't score away from home. We got beat 8-1 or 8-2 against Swansea on FA Cup.
I know that's Premier League team, but it still says a lot, doesn't it, to go and concede 8. I know we conceded 7 against someone in our own league, but that's a separate point.
It's true, and the way that they played in that Swansea game was kind of like a bit embarrassing. The first half, it was like putting a knife through butter. It was so easy for Swansea.
Yeah.
It was like a training game. It was bizarre how easily they cut through them.
We were talking before the show, weren't we, about some of the players. They've still got Alan Smith on their books.
Yeah.
And I think Kevin Nolan's still on their books as well, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, I think he's still registered as a player.
Yeah.
It's Newcastle's promotion team from 2010.
Yeah.
They were quite old then as well, so it's a shame.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of bizarre. Ever since the whole Sven Sol Campbell saga at Notts County, it's been a weird club. They've had a kind of up and down, and I think they see themselves as a League One club at least, but at the moment I think they're not quite there. And we slated him on the first episode, and of course Mehdi Lito scored the winner in that game.
Yeah, I know. We're going to go on to the Luton game. I have a lot of opinions about Mehdi Lito's performance against Luton. But yeah, no, he scored a decent goal. It's more just... something I thought was very interesting about that was Liam O'Neill's. He had a couple of really good chances, didn't he? I don't know if anyone spotted. He seems to be playing this kind of new role, a bit more attacking.
Yeah, he talked to us after the Accrington game, and he said Jordan, he was bought in as a defensive midfielder, but Jordan's obviously moved him to the right-hand side of a diamond and just said, go for it as much as you can. And against Accrington in particular, you just get chance after chance. He had one tipped on the post. Same against Notts County. It seems to be, I think people were a bit undecided about what Liam O'Neill actually contributed to the team.
Absolutely. Especially when he's playing next to Gary Deegan in the same role.
Yeah, he's not going to get, no matter how Deegan plays, he doesn't seem to be able to be dropped. So he's not going to play instead of Deegan. So if he can play on the right-hand side of his diamond, Because you can't play sort of their mover because he'll be too wide.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a much better position. It seems to be he seems to be a player who's improved more under Jordan, I would say, because of this new kind of system.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually.
Yeah, talking to a lot of Cambridge fans, they're seeing a vast improvement and seeing him play more advanced, certainly getting more out of him. Because I mean, Gary Deegan can only pass sidewards. I mean, that's
and he's not even very good at that.
No,
if I'm honest.
I mean, he's
he's good at going through players.
Yeah, he's a 2D player, but I mean, he does a job. But I think to have O'Neill, get the maximum out of O'Neill's potential, and Joe Dunn seems to be doing that.
When O'Neill first came here, he got so much stick, probably justifiably so. There was so many performances. Accrington away last year, when he turned and had a pop at the fans for all the abuse that he was getting. I mean, at the time, I think it was justified because I don't think he was very good, but it's great to see an improvement.
I think just one thing on Liam O'Neill as well, which was perhaps surprising when he first came, is having been signed by Sean Derry, who had such a successful career in the role that he would have imagined Liam O'Neill to be playing in for Cambridge, in that defensive midfield role. And it didn't go, you know, anywhere near to plan. You mentioned Accrington, and I think a lot of his problem was the way that he was sort of unveiled as a Cambridge player. I think if you remember it, he was lauded up as this sort of hero returning home. And he'd never really made any... I mean, I'd never heard of him, to be honest, before we signed him. And I think he was sort of on a hide into nothing from the very beginning. And as we've said there, I mean, he's starting to improve now in this sort of new box-to-box role. I've always thought he's quite energetic, which is probably one of the best parts of his game. Mm. Positionally, I was never convinced, which is perhaps why it didn't go quite so well in the slightly deeper role. But yeah, absolutely improving, and you know, obviously long may that continue.
Yeah, good stuff. The more pressing issue that we need to address, which we haven't addressed yet, is the bobble hats. It's a new phenomenon, and Joe Dunn has brought this in, and it's taking Twitter by storm.
Someone in the PR department is having an absolute field day.
It's incredible.
It's amazing. It's nice, though. I quite like it. It's just
something as well is that I think one of the main criticisms of the club, sort of, let's just say, pre-Christmas, was that it had become so disconnected from the fans.
Yeah.
And it's a tiny little thing, and it's, you know, people looking from the outside in would be thinking it's completely irrelevant, and they're possibly right, but it's just a little thing which makes the club feel a little bit more real to the fans, which is good. So more of that stuff, and I should think the club shop will be absolutely raking it in the last couple of weeks.
Absolutely. I'm seeing people walking around the city centre, you know, working in the city centre. I see people walking around, you know, every day with them on. It's great. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, yesterday, looking on Saturday, across the NRE, it's just bobble hats the whole way along. It's brilliant.
Matt Ramsey's Twitter post of there was like four people in four different rows, and it was just like a line of bobble hats. It was perfect. Great.
I do wonder if we were talking that if Joe Dunn's contractually obliged to wear that bobble hat all year round, first game of the season, we've got, you know, 35 degrees sweltering, he's wearing his bobble hat
and shorts.
Exactly. Let's move on to the Accrington game. By all accounts, Cambridge gave a good account of themselves, but, you know, eventually beaten by that Caden Jackson goal.
Yeah, it was a really strange match. It's the best that Cambridge have played probably all season, to be honest. But you hate to sort of blame one person or say the match hinged on one moment, but the Uche Pezu chance was incredible, you know. People are still a bit undecided about what Billy Waters brings to his squad, but he was just relentless in his pressing. And he, you know, forced the centre back into a mistake, Uche pounced on it. The keeper was already going down, do you know what I mean? Like, the goal was kind of gaping, and he just put his shirt on his legs. A few minutes later, the score. When I first saw the goal, I didn't think it was a foul. When I've seen it back, I've been like, oh, maybe it is. But, you know, Liam O'Neill had a chance tipped onto the post, but Halliday, they had a chance saved. It was kind of like, you're like, oh, the same old problems I'll be having ahead a little bit here. Yeah, you've really got to take those chances.
We talked last time about how mature a player he's become, and in that Notts County game, I wrote a little review afterwards, a little match report, and I wrote about how kind of reliable he's become as a striker, which is quite different to when he first came. And it's the sort of, that chance against Accrington is the sort of chance I'd expect him to miss when he first came here, and it's the sort of chance that now he'd go and slot. But it's still that little frustrating edge to Uche, which he just can't quite seem to...
Was it earlier in the season? It was against Forest Green when he was missing everything, when he scored that like wedge, an unbelievable wedge shot, and that kind of sums him up. I think his overall game, even since Christmas, I think, has improved. You know, balls are sticking to him yesterday, and it was the same at Accrington, but you know, you just, it was just so frustrating. You just hadn't, it was exacerbated because they went down and scored. But
I think, you know, also just on their goal, I mean, I personally think it was a pretty obvious foul. Wasn't at the match, but having seen it on the highlights, I was pretty astounded that it got given. Jackson, it was like a two-handed push on the back. And you think, sometimes you can sort of understand perhaps why players maybe go down quite easily, because I think if Taft, who it was who got pushed, if he'd have gone down there, I think it's a pretty, you know, cut and dry free kick. But as it is, he didn't go down, and you know, Jackson still had quite a bit to do. I think he still had to sort of round the keeper and slot it in. But you know, as you say, you're looking at sort of moments in matches, and to quote Sean Derry, that's fine lines, isn't it? Sometimes. And but I think the main thing to take out of that is that we gave a really good team a really good game, and you know, that's an improvement in itself, really.
I mean, Andrew, you'll be able to say, but as someone who was there, it looked like the sort of performance away to second in the league that under Derry is just a completely different performance than it would have been under Derry.
Yeah, it just, for the negativity under Derry, for want of a better word, kind of thing. You know, the players just looked a bit more confident. There was a counter attack at one point when it started from their free kick, and Halliday worked it forward to Waters, and it looked like the chance had gone, but then they reworked it. You know, Halliday put the cross back in the area. They just look so much more convincing under Jordan. And I can't quite put my finger on what it actually is, because he hasn't had any time on the training ground with them. He must just be pumping them full of confidence. I think the Liam O'Neill thing makes a huge difference. I think this diamond seems to work a lot better under Dunne than it ever did under Derry. I think Derry played the diamond because he felt like he had to play the diamond sometimes to get the two strikers on the pitch, whilst Jordan actually believes in the system which he's deploying. But then again, it is about the result. Like, I guess it was quite a Derby result in many ways as well, because they're dominating and not taking the chances.
The whole thing does feel quite reinvigorated, doesn't it? The whole team, the whole squad, just every performance.
Yeah,
just feels
everything. Like, where the press conferences take place, they've kind of redone the little room, and we've got like big like portraits up of like photos of the team celebrating. We've got a new board saying Cambridge, our club, our city. We've got photos up of House and Dunk celebrating with the fans at Chesterfield.
God, we're making it sound like Derry's era is like Soviet Russia.
I don't think it was that bad. I don't know, maybe overcompensating a bit, but yeah, it does. Everyone seem, that's why the bobble hat's so good. I think it's a genuine connection back to the fans.
Do you think this is a honeymoon period and it's going to drop down?
I think we'll find out, won't we, in the next couple of weeks, really. We alluded to the sort of six-game run that followed the Grimsby game, starting with Notts County. And as we say, is it just a case of we beat the teams we're expected to beat and then come unstuck against the good teams in the league? But we said last time as well that it's like an extended job interview, really, isn't it? Honeymoon period, it's hard to say because we haven't really had anyone new come in, so it's not a bounce as such, is it? It's sort of an indefinable thing, isn't it? They're just freer, I think, on the pitch. They just look like they're not playing with sort of a weight on their shoulders anymore. So, as I say, we'll have to see about that.
I mean,
but certainly, yeah,
going 10 forward from an available 15 points in its first five games, which I mean, it's great form, it's brilliant. And I don't know if you saw this stat. After Saturday against Luton, Joe Dunn's earned more points from losing positions in the five games he's been in charge than Derry had under the 37 before that. So Derry's last 37 games.
I mean, that's one of the criticisms and of Derry. If they fell behind, they were never going to win a game. They were absolutely not. You know, they get a point, but they're not going to win it. And I think Jordan's proved, you know, against Chesterfield, fair enough, Chesterfield aren't a very good team. But, like, you know, yesterday, they would have crumbled under Derry. Like, I've got absolutely no doubt. And that's because I think, especially towards the end of Derry's reign, like, at Yeovil and stuff, you thought, once you go one goal, you thought, that's it, game over. And Dunn seems to have found a way to actually influence games, which I think is something Sean couldn't do. Once he fell behind, he didn't know how to, even though the tactics are the same, you basically put a move on. It seems to still be a bit more effective.
Yeah, when he brought, well, just moving on to that Luton game, when he brought on, there was that period at the start of the second half, the first 10-15 minutes, Luton came out and they looked quite good. They kind of had a lot of control. I thought we couldn't really get out of our half, we weren't building attacks. And then he brought Amu and Maris on. And I mean, the whole game, I know it's just a simple substitution that Derry was making as well, but the whole atmosphere changed. You know, we went and won one corner and then the red card, and then it just kind of, the whole, it just built up, like you say. We just managed to start building attacks a lot more and just go for a team like Luton as well.
Yeah, I kind of wonder about the Luton if it was a bit of like a perfect storm. So the red card did undoubtedly help Cambridge. And also with Hilton going off injured, I think that they had no sort of recognisable strikers on the pitch, or not prolific ones. But yeah, just that width, I'm a huge fan of David Murray, I'm a huge fan of George Maris. I kind of think that's such an effective kind of last 20 minutes tactic to have. I would love to see him start, but if he's going to play with Diamond, he can't start. And yeah, it was just great to see him actually just going for it in a way, because like, if you're going to concede, you might as well, if it's second, you might as well at least try and score, I guess.
Yeah, we brought that very point up on the show yesterday. It was 1-0 after, you know, what, 60 minutes or whatever, and me and Lewis were saying, you might as well go for it, and that was completely the impression we were getting from the game. And you know, the changes that they made was really positive, that we didn't have when Derry was, you know, in charge.
It's really refreshing.
I think as well, just it wasn't just the changes that he made. I think it was the timing of them as well, that it was sort of just as maybe Luton was starting to slack a little bit, and we were starting to build up something resembling momentum, and then you bring Amu on and Maris as well. And that's just sort of the driving force that really, you know, pushes you on. And yeah, they changed the game. And as Andrew said as well, I think Hilton going off was probably the turning point.
Yeah, good stuff. Luke Berry returning to the Abbey.
Just
pretty hostile reception,
wasn't it? Just
it was. Honestly, I walked into that ground and I was thinking, I wonder what this reception is going to be like. Obviously, he's a hero in, you know, looking back at the recent history. But then he went to Luton, and it just... It was, honestly, it was more hostile than I thought, and it was so brilliantly poisonous that I was...
Yeah, it was really quite pantomime. It was absolutely brilliant. Yeah,
I loved it.
It's a proper way to do it. It was consistent as well. Yeah. It's been a while away, went in the ground, there was always one or two kind of chirping up and up. Yeah, it was
brilliant. Like, I found it hilarious, but when, like, we'd win a corner, and we wouldn't be singing, like, Come on Cambridge or anything, it'd just be singing, like, Attacking Luke Berry. I'm not going to repeat the song.
Probably best. Also, Gary Deegan going through the back of Luke Berry.
Yeah, there's a fantastic picture.
A great picture, isn't it?
Twitter that we put on our own profile.
I've never celebrated a tackle like that. Like, I genuinely like fist pumped the screen.
It's fair to say that, sorry, Gary Deegan has come in for a lot of criticism for perhaps not being the hard man that he was brought in to be. But I think he's been forgiven in that one tackle.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much half a season of poor performances. And I mean, as we've said, it was certainly more hostile than I was expecting. I thought there might be a little bit of, you know, maybe booing here and there if he goes down easily or whatnot. But it was start to finish just really hostile, and I think it's understandable as well, because you know we do need to remember that he's handed in two transfer requests at the club, and when he initially went to Barnsley back in 2014, I think people were sort of, well, he's got us promoted. He's going up to a higher level.
Yeah, exactly.
He's progressing his career in the way that, you know, possibly he should be doing. So fair enough. And it didn't go well for him at Barnsley. I think he initially fitted in quite well, and then there was a change of manager there.
Yeah.
But and then it sort of went downhill from there. And then we bring him back, and we sort of rebuild his career. We turn him into the player that he is today. And then it's just the way it was handled. I mean, from all sides of it, the club could have done better, you know, got a bigger fee and whatnot, but it's just the way he sort of held us to ransom a week before the end of the transfer window. He left with a really bitter taste. And I think that sort of reception was really understandable yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was, like you say, a pantomime, but it was kind of, you know, fitting for the game, I think.
I thought it affected his performance quite a lot as well. I know you were saying that a lot of the Luton press guys thought he played really well.
Yeah, maybe before him and Hilton were, like, running the show. It was a few passes, like, a few kind of... He was in the channel every time, kind of. The passes always there.
Yeah.
And
I didn't even think he was the best Luke on their team yesterday. I thought Luke Gambin was much better.
I don't think he wasn't really involved. There was a couple of nice passes, but yeah, just what you come to expect from
him. He had a head of clear off close, didn't he? Did Gary Deegan get something on... Might have did you chance at some point? But yeah, he wasn't like pulling the strings. He wasn't like kind of a midfield, like Ollie Lee, for example. He was absolutely running the show, really.
No 70-yard goals this time, though, unfortunately.
No.
Thankfully. So while we're on that game, who do we fancy to go up at this point in the season?
Luton. I've got the odds here, if anyone had a look on Skybet. So Luton are 1 to 100 to go up, so pretty much... massive favourites. Accrington 4-9, Wickham 8-13, Mansfield evens, Notts 11-8, Exeter 7-4, Swindon 3-1 and Cambridge 200-1. So bring it in as the outsider there. No, I fancy Luton, Accrington, and Wickham actually. Yeah,
I think depending on how Mansfield go in terms of the new manager bedding in, I think they're a really strong shout. You know, I think probably second only to Luton. They've got one of the strongest squads in the league. I think Accrington will hold on, just purely because of the talent they've got going forward. We didn't mention it when we were talking about Accrington, but Billy Key, top goal scorer in the league, scored 19 goals this season. I think they've probably got the firepower just to see them over the line, added into the fact that they're already a few points clear. Mm. I think Wickham might just fall away. We'll come on to them shortly, but they've had something of a wobble recently.
Yeah.
Luton, as we've said, look pretty confirmed to be somewhere in the top three. I would predict they'd be as champions, but again, they're having a bit of a wobble now, and I think anyone in the top seven could still realistically have a chance of breaking into the automatic promotion places, but I think probably it'll be between those five: Luton, Accrington, Wickham, Notts County and Mansfield.
We've already talked about Notts, but I really don't fancy Notts.
Yeah, I can see them having a total wobble. They're really knocked out in the semi-finals.
They're just really inconsistent, aren't they? I mean, actually, there's an interesting story that's been reported by various outlets recently, is that Notts County are trying to sign a guy called Diego Capel, who used to play for Sporting Lisbon and Sevilla, and he's made two full appearances for the Spanish national team. And they're going to be offering him, apparently, as I say, it's been reported, it's not confirmed, a reported £15,000 a week to come and play for Notts County, which are making the highest paid player in League 2.
That will turn into, imagine a strike force of Amiobi instead, with then Diego Capel, Alan Smith and Kevin Nolan behind him. That would be the strangest team in England.
Notts County are weird. Yeah. I said it earlier, they're just a weird team, they're like an anomaly. Just looking at the table, lads. Exeter, with two games in hand, I mean, they've won the last two games. If they win the next two, they'll go into the automatic promotion places.
A bit like Notts for me. I think they're a little bit too inconsistent. They seem to be able to bounce back well from poor results. Mm. And Stockley, who played for us very briefly a couple of years ago, seems to be doing really well for them. But, yeah, I think they're going to be a little bit too inconsistent. But having said that, I think the top seven will probably be the top seven now. Coventry are probably the only ones that I'd fancy to actually break into it. But, yeah, I think it'll be four out of those seven who leave us.
Don't fancy Carlisle. Four wins on the bounce, late run into the playoffs.
No.
Good stuff. Okay. Finally, for the part one, just a little review of Joe Dunn's time as head coach so far. So we've touched on it. You know, he's really brought some positivity to the club, but he's got some really good results. And as you said, 10 points from possible 15.
Yeah.
It speaks volumes, doesn't it?
Yeah. My only concern with it is... it was kind of... I talked to Graham Daniels, the director of football, in midweek. He mentioned it was kind of very similar to when the takeoff was announced in Derry's position. He's been given these sort of three tasks: to play courageously, energetically and entertainingly, the same as Derry was entertaining, pick up as many points, and I can't remember what the third one was.
It's quite a lot to ask, isn't it, of a League Two manager? You know, do you want to be playing swashbuckling, delightful Barcelona 2009 style football? Oh, and you need to win every game as well.
Yeah, and you know, Derry did quite well over Christmas, and I kind of feel like they were like, oh, we need to kind of keep him on a bit now. And it never felt hugely convincing we were ever actually going to keep Sean. I don't think there's still a feeling that I'm not entirely sure it's going to keep Joe on as well. I think Joe really will have to prove himself, because they've obviously been inundated with requests. It's probably quite an attractive job still, but then you've got all the things about the finances, what's that going to look like for players. You need to pretty much sign down half a team again. But I don't think he could ask any more of Joe Dunn. He's sort of, with fans like him, he's playing pretty swashbuckling football at times, and he's kind of getting the results too. So
that's we've already talked about the Luton game. I think it's so indicative of the change. We've already mentioned this. But Luton are by far and away the best team in this league. And we went and we were well worth a point. If anything, we actually deserved to win. I think there was two chances at the end, which me and Tom were saying, when we came out of the ground, I was absolutely buzzing with a point. And I also woke up this morning.
Having sort of woke up this morning, watched the highlights back. The two chances you're speaking about fell to Jabai Bire and Uche, I think it was.
The Uche one is... we've already talked about him, and obviously I don't want to just go on some horrible rant, but he he's running through on goal. It's right towards the end of the game, and he's got two options. The clear, just lay it off to.
We've never looked right. The whole game, Emu was in so much space after he came on. He's never ever turned his head like look at this guy on the end.
And he's shot, didn't he? And it just went straight at the keeper. All he's got to do is roll it through to Ebire or Maris, I think it was, or maybe Emu. I can't remember. And it's just the wrong option. It's the wrong decision to take.
I mean, the one thing I would say about Dunn is that he's actually a coach. And if a point is to kind of have developed players, if that's what they want, he's got a track record of young players at Colchester. So if a long term he's got these Harry Dowland, Leon Davies, then you've got Bonner, who obviously is a bridge between the first team and academy, then it would make a lot of sense to have a guy who will actually take these young players through, then improve them, turn them into saleable assets, whatever you want to do with these guys. So, you know, back when you see Liam O'Neill, what's 6 weeks?
Exactly.
He's a seasoned professional, but Harry Dowland could really benefit from having a Jordan.
I've said it all season that the squad itself, the players in the squad aren't the issue. I think the squad is very decent.
Yeah, I think that as well.
And it just wasn't being coached properly. I think it was so clear, it just wasn't being coached properly, the tactics weren't right, etc, etc. We'll have to go back over that. But yeah, Joe Dunn is...
I think it's his to lose, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so too.
That's certainly the way that I would look at it.
Right, great stuff. Coming up in part two, we're going to look ahead to the Wickham and Swindon games, and then in part three, we've got the football Jenga coming up. Coming up in the second part of Under the Abbey Stand, we're going to look ahead to the Wickham game and the Swindon game and see what we think Cambridge are going to do in the next few games. And we're going to go straight into that now. Wickham away is the first one. And what do we think, gents?
1-0 loss. Move on.
Wow.
They've all been 1-0, haven't they? Every time we've been there since we got promoted, we've lost them all 1-0, and they've all been pretty much exactly the same match.
We played them 7 times. Lost 6 of them, and 4 of those have been 1-0. So that's it, it's done.
Yeah.
That's
done.
I mean,
it's an interesting game though, because they're right up there in the league. I think they're third at the moment, but they've dropped off slightly recently. So perhaps,
2 losses on the bounce.
Yeah, absolutely.
They were 4-0 down to Morecambe in one of them, weren't they? At home,
yes.
I think
they lost. They were 4-0. Kevin Ellison, friend of many Cambridge United fans, I'm sure, scored an absolute blinder in that game.
He's such a good player, and I hate him.
And you can say that about Wickham as well, because they're a good team, clearly. The table doesn't lie, but they're a horrible football team.
I kind of feel like that's what Notts County want to be. Like, this really effective kind of, like, niggly, horrible sort of team.
I read a really interesting thing in The Guardian this week about Ainsworth. So did you know that Wickham, when he went there, they could barely afford to pay him. They had absolutely no finances whatsoever. And the first thing he did is scrap the youth academy and the reserve team. So they don't have a youth academy. It's just the first team, and they work on quite a small squad. They don't have a goalkeeping coach either. I think there's only still now 2 full-time coaches, one of them being Ainsworth. So it's just this really stripped back, bare-boned operation. And it works. I think they had a 5-year plan and to go up to League One. And next year is the 5th year.
Yeah. I mean, they work with Lawmark could really well as well. Like QPR, the links with QPR and stuff. That guy, was it Easy?
He
was the best player I've seen at Abbey this season, I would say, from a visiting team.
Scored like, two
absolute
worldies,
So
they're also, we were saying they're a bit similar to Notts County. They're also similar to Notts County in that their front line is ancient.
Yeah, it's like 107, I think, between the three of them. Which is
And this season, I mean, the ones that are making the headlines really are, of course, Adebayo Akinfenwa and Craig McHale-Smith. But, you know, between them, they've scored 26 goals this season, which is a pretty decent return. So they're probably the ones to watch out for. I'm not sure where Scott Cashcare is. I think he's been injured. He scored the winner at Adams Park last season for them. It's a really tough game, and it's one where I think we're going to have to sort of, you know, work the dark arts of football, because that's exactly what Wickham will be doing. I'm absolutely sure of that.
Did you know Ainsworth is the 4th longest serving manager in England?
Not surprising. He's been there a long time, hasn't he? Certainly since we got promoted back into the league.
Blimey. That's a weird stat to think about.
I think it says more about the culture of sacking coaches.
Fickle football clubs. I think you're right. But good stat. Right, so I think we're all unanimous that we're going to lose 1-0.
Brilliant.
Great. Well, maybe a better fare against Swindon at the Abbey on Saturday the 17th.
Yeah, this is a really interesting one, actually. As it stands, it's going to be similar to the Grimsby game in that neither team have got a permanent manager. David Flitcroft, of course, went to Mansfield during the week to replace the outgoing Steve Evans, who I'm sure we'll come on to later on in the show. Again, it's going to be really tough because Swindon have got the best away record in the league. It's been absolutely fantastic. I know they absolutely thumped Luton at Kenilworth Road earlier on in the season. And, of course, in the reverse fixture at the County Ground, it was probably one of the most disappointing games of the season, I think. It was another one of those sort of typical Sean Derry era performances where we just sort of folded against a decent team.
We had so many chances in that as well.
Yeah. I mean, we said earlier as well, I think they're still probably in the hunt for automatic promotion. So, I mean, they're 5 points off now. So they're certainly the outsiders in that group that would realistically still be looking to get in. But, I mean, someone that we're going to have to watch out for is Mark Richards, who's been on fire since he signed from Northampton in January. He's a guy with real pedigree at this level. He's won League Two twice, first with Chesterfield and then with Northampton. The games like this, they're very tough. They just keep coming, don't they?
It's interesting. Swindon actually lost to Chesterfield, didn't they, the other week? Did you see that?
Yeah, they did. Yep, that's a coupon buster, whoever I've seen one.
But I'm quite relatively positive about this one.
Yeah, I think if you're going to play them, it's a cliche, play them when there's a bit of a peephole and stuff. You know, you'd agree on how this new kind of system will actually go, but they've got. You imagine it'll be much of the same, just kind of plough on, try and get promoted heads down. But we're positive. I think at home, I think Wickham is a bit of a write off, to be honest. I can't really see us getting anything from that. But at home at the minute,
I mean, I'd already had Accrington off as a write off. I thought, well, we're going to lose there.
Yeah.
I thought 1-0 as well. So if we write those off, and if we manage to get a win against Swindon, I know we've already talked about Joe Dunn, but that's a fantastic return from that run of games.
Yeah, yeah. It depends if you do the five games, if you include Carlisle and the six games as well. If you can get sort of three wins and like a few draws out of that, then that would have been five losses under the previous regime. Absolutely. Yeah.
Games like Saturday's game against Luton, picking up a point in that game, unthinkable. 2 months ago, it's all progress. So it'll be interesting to see how Cambridge get on in those two games, and then of course after that they've got Carlisle at Brunton Park on the 24th, and then finishing on a Friday night match hosting Crawley. So an interesting March for Cambridge United. Coming up in round three, we're going to look for Peter United and their managerial change, which is
that's going to be delightful, isn't it?
Raise some eyebrows. We're going to go around Europe, look at FA Cup and the European leagues, and talk about VAR, and then of course the notorious football Jenga. This third part of Under the Abbey Stand this week, we're going to talk about Peter United and their hilarious appointment.
Yeah, I initially very disappointed that they got a guy who's definitely going to get them results, certainly in the short term. But I can absolutely guarantee that when this falls apart, and it will, whether he gets them promoted, whether he doesn't get them promoted, when this managerial appointment of Steve Evans goes wrong, it is going to be absolutely glorious.
When he was announced as manager, I've never seen you more happy, Tom.
he's going to give us so much quality content. It's fantastic. I mean, we'll just touch on, you know, Grant McCann was sacked after they drew with Wimbledon. At the time, I thought it was harsh. But as we know, Mr. McCann is a guy who doesn't accept normal or good. He wants the very best, and I mean, you know, they're very close to the playoffs, and there's every chance that he might get them promoted. But I think that's more than enough about, you know, positivity surrounding Peterborough United. We just have to come on to Steve Evans' past, don't we? Because he is a man with a checkered history.
Yeah,
it's fair to say.
Yeah.
I've come up with a little list of some of the controversies which have surrounded it. It's all on the public record, so it's all out there. You can Google it yourself. A quick Google search, I haven't done much digging into him, but a quick Google search will tell you that while he was at Boston, he was found guilty following an investigation into contract irregularities while at Boston and suspended from football for 20 months. Still while at Boston, he had to be escorted out of Blundell Park at half-time by police because his abuse of Grimsby Town goalkeeper Steve Mildenhall was so horrendous. He had to be physically removed from the ground. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. I cannot.
Also, physically removing Steve Evans. Oh, it's a that's job. Hard work. It's a job. That's a four-man yeah, job, I reckon. That's a limit.
Yeah. He pleaded guilty to conspiracy to evade tax, which we perhaps won't touch so much on. And something which has followed him around quite a lot is this sort of turncoat behaviour. He relegated Boston to the conference. And in the aftermath of their relegation, he came out and publicly said, right, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to commit to the club. We're going to get this football club back into the Football League. And 3 weeks later, he was announced as Crawley manager. As I say, initially it might be painful. They might get some good results. They might get promoted, but it's going to be fantastic when it all goes.
It's kind of crazy to think that he was manager of Leeds United.
Yeah.
It seems like ages ago, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think, to be fair, Steve Evans in Leeds, it wasn't while he was manager of Leeds, it was while he was manager of Rotherham. Probably one of the best pictures in football is him wandering down the touchline at Elland Road, dressed in a, you know, he's got a sombrero on, he looks like he's going to the beach, because he promised that if he kept Rotherham in the Championship, then he'd do that. An interesting character, and as I say, he's going to make for some fantastic content for us. I could not be happier.
Steve Evans and Barry Fry together at last.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure McAntony's still there in some capacity. He sold a large share of the club to some Canadian, something like that. Yeah. But I'm sure he's still there. I mean, to have those three, McAntony, Barry Fry, and Steve Evans at a football club. Oh my goodness me.
He was already playing politics in one of his interviews. He said that I'm really, really good friends with Fry, we're your personal friends. And he's like, oh, and McCampany's there as well.
Oh, really?
So, like, he's talking about McCampany having, like, a say in the team and stuff. And I thought, that's a dangerous thing.
Oh,
you're going down that road already, you're like, yeah. Oh, he's.
It's all going to go horribly wrong, and I can't wait.
Yeah, it's quite nice, when a rival, something like that happens, and you can sit back and watch it all unfold. When it doesn't really affect your team, which is quite nice. We'll see what happens, and we'll keep you updated with that on here. Right, moving on. Let's talk, first things first, FA Cup games. So we've had another replay for Spurs, drawing against lower league opposition. There's a lot to talk about in respect to this, because it's the issue of replays, but also the issue of VAR.
That replay at Wembley has got to be, honestly, one of the maddest games I can remember. Just not only was there obviously this whole situation with VAR, but the snow, it just made it so biblical. Like, the whole situation, like, it felt like the game just shouldn't be happening.
Yeah, it was bizarre.
The ball thing as well.
Yeah,
that white ball. That was just because it doesn't work with goal line technology or something. Which just seems like unbelievable. Like, that seems like such a bit. It's a ball. I don't understand why I wouldn't.
And they were playing in a white kit, and then the pitch was white, and everything was.
And there was seven goals as well. And Rochdale nearly took the lead at one point. Yeah, like, people forget that.
Hit the post.
Yeah,
just in terms of replays, I mean, there is debate around whether or not they should be scrapped. I mean, we know ourselves as Cambridge fans that, you know, sort of what how brilliant earning that replay can be. You know, we went to Old Trafford ourselves not so long ago, and it just seems ridiculous that, in a way, it seems like it's the lower league clubs being punished because the Premier League teams
can't want
a couple of weeks off. You know, I mean, I'm not sure how much Rochdale earned out of that, but, you know, I don't think Wembley was full, but they would have earned a lot of money out of it.
I do know that Newport earned close to $1 million from their run.
It's a bit cliche, but it really does keep these clubs going. And to scrap that and to take that opportunity away, I think it'd be a real shame.
Well, you know, it's all part of the romance of the cup, you know, exactly. As they say. I think it's fantastic.
You know, if you're Spurs and you go away to Rochdale and don't win,
that's your own fault.
It's not Rochdale's fault, is it? You know, they've got a cracking result there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as I say, replays, I think, are something which need to stay in the FA Cup.
I concur. Fully, even as a Spurs fan who's just seen two replays against two lower league clubs, I still think it's, you know, the point you make is absolutely true. If you can't win on the night, then you have to go and replay. And quite an odd incident with the penalty, Son's penalty.
Can I get this right? You're not allowed to. Is this the rule? I never. So you're not allowed to stop.
Yeah,
you're allowed to stop.
Yeah, you're to finish.
But I think the issue with Sons was
he totally lost momentum, didn't he?
Yeah,
he stopped dead.
What's wrong with that?
It's because the keeper. It's I think it's a gamesmanship issue, and it makes the keeper dive.
Yeah.
I think it's a rule they brought in. It's a bit of an odd one.
I seem to remember Cristiano Ronaldo doing it quite a lot.
And, yeah.
As I say, like the feint where you sort of, you know, like take a step and then sort of drag the other leg just to slow down your run is absolutely fine. And, you know, it's tactical. It's a good way of taking a penalty. It's mind games, isn't it, with the keeper? But, you know, you can't just stop halfway through a run up, can you? And,
I personally don't see the issue with it. I think you should be allowed to. Why not?
I think it should just be a one step.
Just one step. One step. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like I don't think you should allow a step. Yeah. Just kick it.
You just kick it. Yeah. Toe punt. You have to toe punt it. No, but I think it was a weird one. And I found it weird that they yellow carded him and then gave an indirect free kick the other way.
Yeah.
Surely it's a retake.
It seems excessive, doesn't it?
Yeah.
To book someone, because it's not like he's kicking the ball away intentionally from like a free kick or something.
It was bizarre. It was a completely bizarre decision and a bizarre game, like you said.
Fair to say the referee had an interesting night.
Are we all agreement that VAR should be scrapped in its entirety?
Just talking about VAR, on Saturday the Football Lawmakers had a meeting. They had a summit, I suppose.
Yeah.
And they sort of unanimously approved VAR. So it looks like it's going to be used at the World Cup.
Yeah.
Used by referees who have never used it before. I have a lot of issues with it, but the biggest one for me is this issue of, you know, like subjectivity with it. So
yeah.
Goal line technology is fine. It's common sense because the ball is either in the goal or it's not in the goal. And, you know, you can extend that to like the touch lines and say the ball's either gone out of play or it hasn't. It can be used for offsides because for the most part, someone is either going to be offside or they're not.
Yeah.
But things like fouls and red cards and penalties, you know, you could sit 100 football fans in a room and I don't, you know, you certainly never get everyone agreeing. You'd always have some who agree and some who disagree. And that's how it is now.
I think even with offsides,
it's
like
completely irrelevant.
Man United at Huddersfield the other week, that matter.
Yeah,
there was a little bit of
a lane to spend.
But a lot of people saying, is he offside? Is he like, as in, like, there was an argument about whether he was offside or onside.
Yeah.
Even that isn't black and white. It's not like cricket or rugby, which. I don't follow those sports so much.
That's another thing, isn't it? That certainly in cricket, I know I've been to cricket a little bit, and you know exactly what's going on, not only when you're there, but when you're watching it on TV as well.
Because
they have the guy who's, you know, going through the decisions mic'd up, so they go, "Oh, is the ball in line? Is it going to hit the stumps, etc." And, you know, on at the game, so if you're at Lords watching the Ashes and a decision needs to be reviewed, comes up on a massive screen and, you know, it'll be like decision pending and then out, not out, etc.
Yeah.
And that's one of the biggest things as well, that I went to Chelsea Norwich where they used VAR as well in the FA Cup, and I had no idea what was going on. You know, there were just these pauses in the game. And you're sort of thinking, what's happening here? And
it's another kick in the teeth for the match-going supporter
who
sits there for 8 minutes in the freezing cold watching a referee with his finger in his ear.
Yeah,
I think that's the thing. Like, the only reason you go to football is to actually feel some kind of emotion towards a game. And like, people are fallible. Humans are fallible. You know, you could argue the referee's mistake for the Taft was just as bad for Uche missing that goal, and that's the thing. Football has mistakes; it's imperfect. Like that's what it is.
I think this is what the debate really is. That I think you've got people on the one side, like us here, who see football as purely entertainment. So we're against VAR because it causes these stoppages in the game. And then on the other side, you've got people who want video assistant referee introduced, and they're people who think that football is something where the best team should win no matter what. So as a purely competitive sport, rather than sort of, you know, emotional and stuff. I mean, let's just say
turns it into chess, doesn't it, or something?
You know,
board game or something. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, it wouldn't have benefited us personally, but the James Collins goal for Luton on Saturday, he had to check whether he was offside. You know, just a quick look over his shoulder. Imagine those Luton fans who have, you know, come in the, you know, it's snowing. It's, you know, the 2,000 odd of them have come down, and you pay well over the odds to go to football in the first place. And if you can't have that moment of scoring a goal away from home in a big game because the referee needs to check with some guy
sitting in office in Brackley or something.
You know, I don't know. I just think, it's a kick in the teeth, isn't it, really?
That moment when your team scores a goal is kind of indescribable. It's kind of like a blackout, isn't it? You're just in this like momentary state of euphoria.
Yeah.
And taking that away, Pochettino said it after the game, didn't he? This subject of emotion. He said it was embarrassing, and his quote is, if we are going to kill the emotion in football, then the fans of football will not be happy. And he's right.
Yeah, and I think like the other sports which VAR is using is so they're not fluid sports. So like tennis is also, in rugby it's very high scoring sports. So like, it was like the Wales game of a week, it was so subjective whether he actually scored that try against England. But rugby's really high scoring. Football, there's 2-3 goals a game probably on average. So yeah. If you're taking,
and things like rugby and cricket as well have like natural stoppages, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Like
exactly.
Between, you know, in cricket, between overs and stuff. But yeah, I mean,
there has to be solid questions. Like, is there any reason why I can't award this? Not, or did you see anything going on in the big vicinity of the penalty area during this?
I think the better thing to happen would just be to change football culture, particularly in the media, just to accept that people are going to make mistakes at times. Because, I mean, you know, if a referee makes a bad call, I think it's the old cliche that it evens out over a course of a season, and it does tend to, I think. And I don't know. I mean, VAR is supposed to rule out any uncertainty, and here we are talking about VAR rather than Tottenham scoring 6 goals.
Yeah, exactly. It's you know, it's becoming the main event when it shouldn't be. It should just be an aside, and it's not working. It needs to be refined.
Yeah.
I think we have to kind of come to terms with the fact that it's going to be a thing.
Yeah, it is, and it has to be, like you say, it has to be changed and refined, and they'll get to a point where it aids the referee, but it doesn't. Yeah. Hopefully.
I mean, or we just stop talking about referee decisions, full stop.
Yeah. Oh, no, I mean, what are they going to talk about a match of the day if they can't talk about referee decisions?
That's the thing, it's become so obsessed. I mean, after the Accrington game, my first bit was Jordan blasts the referee, so I'm just as fallible as everyone else. Yeah. But, you know, if you just accept that these people are... I mean, how many matches actually swing on referee decisions? I would imagine, if you're some bad referees, like Trevor Kettle's a bad referee, but like...
Yeah. Trevor Kettle is a national treasure. He's fantastic. I love watching that guy referee football.
He actually sometimes makes decisions.
He just sort of bumbles around the pitch.
He manages to
take counterintuitive. It was like Accrington. The decisions he was making were so counterintuitive. I can't forget who the referee was, but the linesman weren't doing anything either. The linesman should have seen the Taft thing. But like, you know, maybe it's more help across the board. Rather than...
I suppose from our point of view, just on VAR, is that I don't think it's going to necessarily affect us. I don't think it's going to reach League Two anytime soon.
No, I think you're probably right. So, Tom, have we got questions from the Twitter account?
We have got questions from the Twitter account. We've had a lot again, just sort of briefly. In the last couple of weeks, we've had some excellent feedback across the board, on whether it be on Facebook, on the forums, on Twitter. So, you know, thanks very much for that. Keep listening, keep subscribing, etc.
I was going to say, I wanted to just say thank you to everyone who'd listened to the first show.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's, the feedback has been phenomenal. It's been quite overwhelming, actually. It's been really nice. So thank you.
I did put on our Twitter account the other day that we had our listening stats back from Apple, and we had people in Ukraine and Colombia listening to the pod. So I don't know how you say hello in Colombian or
it's hola.
Oh, well, of course
it's Spanish.
It is. I certainly knew that. anyway, this is the question part of the show where we take your questions and answer them as best we can. The first one comes from Charlie Root. And his question was, looking forward to next season, what should the club's expectations be?
Should be what it has been since it's been in League Two, which is just try and go up, I think. I think it's just as simple as that. Just try and build the promotion side.
Not finish bottom of the top half.
Yeah, try and finish anywhere other than mid-table.
Yeah.
What I would just say on that is that, I mean, the aim that people tend to refer to is getting in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just get one thing straight, right? The seventh team in the league gets in the playoffs. We should not be aiming for that. We should be aiming to finish in the top three. No question.
Yeah.
That should be the aim.
Also, if who's coming down from League One? Bury,
Foxhill,
Oldham aren't very good either, are they?
You know,
and MK.
And if you look at the current top three, Accrington and Wickham, we touched on basically shoestring, and in League One, Shrewsbury are top of the league. So you know, I think, you know, automatic promotion, I don't know about you guys, but that should certainly be the aim.
There's such a decent core of a squad there, at least, that with a couple of decent signings, I'd fully back us. But I have backed us every summer since we've been back in the league.
Yeah, I guess it's who we retain as well in the squad. That's a big thing. In the managerial situation, I guess you kind of need to sort us out quite soon, because as soon as there's a bit of stability, you can be like, oh, well, now we can kind of plan. If over the summer, it's difficult to kind of recruit, I imagine, if you've got... no manager and no players as well. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, that's fantastic. So automatic promotion.
I think. Yeah. At least playoffs.
No, hang on. Win the league.
Win the league, yep. Well, of course, that's got to be game, hasn't it? So the next question that we had in, which we're not going to answer now, is from Ryan Johnson, who is friend of the pod and Cambridge United drummer, although he's a bit part-time these days. And he asked us the best 11 of players that we've seen at Cambridge United. Now, we're not going to answer that just yet. I think we're all agreed that we're going to do that as sort of a more formal article piece sort of thing. Mm. And we're going to do that with our listeners and stuff and try and get our best 11 ever, basically. So keep an eye out for that. So the next question that we're going to try and tackle is from Connor O'Reilly, who asks us what our favourite goal is since we got promoted.
This is also, there was a similar question as well, wasn't there?
From Tom Dobbin, who asked us our favourite goal celebration. I know exactly what you're going to say, Julian.
It's Jimmy Spencer against Leighton Orient on, I can't remember the day, the 31st of January.
I think it was
January.
The 30th of January 2016.
When we won 3-1 at Orient.
Ingrained in my brain.
It is moments of madness.
I sometimes wake up in a cold sweat over that moment. He signed the night before, didn't he?
Yeah.
And I mean, you haven't seen anything until you've seen hundreds, thousands of grown men bundling
Tom
over
Walker flying down flights of steps.
Oh dear, absolutely fantastic. Any others?
The other one I thought of was another Jimmy Spencer goal against Plymouth. It was when we were still in with a chance of playoffs, and it was second to last game of the season, and I think we went 1-0 down.
We saw two in a minute, didn't we?
That second one.
Yeah,
I remember that being pretty, because I think we went into the last game with a chance of the playoffs still. Yeah, I remember that one being great. Notts County away as well, a few weeks before that. Leeds as well. There's been quite a few.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's yours?
Andrew, have you got any?
From my limited experience, I think Giovanni Bounce, the third one against Notts County, just because that was
volley, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just surreal. Fantastic. It was a good goal, but it was just a bit surreal as well. You're like, what is going on here? Luke Berry's against Portsmouth, I think it was a free kick. That was really good.
That's what I've got here as well. Luke Berry scored a number of belters. We do have to begrudgingly accept that.
That free kick against Crewe as well, do you remember that?
Yeah.
That's a couple of weeks before.
Barry Cole's against Yeovil away. I think it was
Tuesday night.
The only reason why is because it was on a Tuesday night and I was livid about being there. So I was like,
I was there by choice as well. Think about that.
Good Lord. I think for me, Piero Mingoia, do you remember when he had that purple patch?
Oh,
against Stevenage, is what you're going to say. Yeah. That was a belting goal.
Piero Mingoia scored a number of good goals last season.
Yeah, it was last season. Wasn't it?
There was the one at Sheffield Wednesday in stoppage time for about 57 yards out, in off the post. And then the other one, which was the game was absolutely ridiculous, wasn't it? The Accrington match last season when Will Norris saved two stoppage time penalties. But Piero Mingoia's winner was Uche in his very earliest days, when you're not really sure what to expect from him. He runs down the whole touchline, he sort of Ronaldo chops on the edge of the area and delivers the most sublime ball you've ever seen, and Piero Mingoia absolutely rifled it into the net. It was fantastic.
Still, for my money, technically our best player, just with his technical ability and his feet, some of the crosses he can dig out.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think I can safely say that I'm a different man ever since Jimmy Spencer put us 3-1 up against
absolutely. So on a related note, we've had a question from Mark Slater, and I'll explain this one a little bit. And he asked, have any Cambridge United players scored a better goal than the fans' team away to Bury? Now, I'll have to explain this one. I'll have to get this out of the way early doors in this podcast. So Cambridge United have got a fans' team called Abbey United. We travel up and down the country playing games before games. So we played, for example, against like West Ham fans and stuff like that. And we travelled to Bury on a cold November morning in 2014, and I scored an absolute rocket. So the goalkeeper rolls it out to the centre-back, James Mills, who will probably be listening, and he delivered a fantastic ball, just dropped it over my shoulder. I think I was about 35, 40 yards out, and just on the volley into the top corner. So anyway, enough about that. And so
the only reason you wanted to ask that question was just so we could talk about this a goal that he scored.
I bring it up at least once a day, I think. So I suppose the question that we'll take from that is, what's the best goal you've seen? Not favourite, just the very best goal you've seen following Cambridge of all time.
Well, any team, or just Cambridge goal?
Just the best Cambridge goal.
It might be that Mingoia goal against Accrington. Yeah, genuinely.
I've got a couple from a few years ago, And the first one was that, I don't know if you guys remember it, Wayne Hatswell scored a free kick from about 40 yards out against Forest Green, which was absolutely fantastic.
That Carlson goal at Grimsby.
Yeah. Yeah, that was in Jez George's days, wasn't it, I think? Another really good goal. And then we touched on the Luke Berry free kicks. Are there any others that we can remember? Absolute worldies.
Hang on, there must be. Oh, Liam Hughes' free kick at Tamworth.
Yes.
Remember that?
You touched on that in your piece, bro, about Liam Hughes. We won't use the exact word that you used.
No.
But an absolute rocket of a free kick, wasn't it? Another cold Tuesday night. There's a lot of cold Tuesday nights following Cambridge, aren't there?
Yeah, they go hand in hand with the Football League, a cold Tuesday night.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So that's the question that we've had sent in. Thanks very much, everyone, for getting in touch. Keep them coming. We're absolutely loving them. We love discussing them.
At Abbey Stand Pod, tweet us on there, and we'll endeavour to answer your questions going forward.
Just a tiny little plug. This has been really fun and everything's great, but there is a lot of money going out of our back pocket to fund Audio Boom and being on iTunes, and we'd love to buy our domain names. There's some stickers for sale. Even if you don't like the stickers, they're only a fiver, and it would be a brilliant contribution just to help us out. If you'll find it, we'll tweet a link on our Twitter later on.
Yeah, good stuff. Just before we go on to Football Jenga, I just want to give a massive shout out to the groundspeople at Cambridge United yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. We should have touched on it, should we, really, before the Luton match.
There was a question, someone asked a question, who's the unsung hero in this team?
They did, yeah. It's those two, isn't it?
It's got a
collective.
Yeah. Putting that game on's incredible. You said it yesterday, when I saw Villa was off in the morning.
Yeah.
I thought, well, there's no way this can go. Surely we're not. This can't go ahead. It was amazing.
He was explaining his process, and it's just like, I was never thought it'd be off. Like, he's like, I knew I could always get it on, even though it was minus 11 at one point or something.
And he was there at 4 in the morning, wasn't he?
4 in the morning, He was there till way after a game and stuff like that. He just hasn't slept for days.
It's amazing. I think naming Ian Dyer's team of volunteers and Mick Brown as well as their... as the man of the match yesterday, it was a lovely
nice touch, wasn't it?
Real good touch, but deserved. I mean, absolutely. You know, absolutely. It was
also, I think just on Ian Dyer, I could be wrong, but I seem to remember that many years ago, I mean, he's turned down opportunities to go and work at...
Wasn't it Arsenal?
Chelsea.
I mean, Chelsea, you know, I mean, just testament to the man, isn't it? Absolutely fantastic effort yesterday, and in the longer term, just ever since he's been at the club, really, absolutely fantastic.
Cambridge and Carlisle, the two games on out of them all. Quite odd, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought Carlisle would have been on. That's the one game I was absolutely certain wouldn't have been on.
Their groundsmen, like Cambridge's, are
I was going to say, he's had a lot to deal with over the years, hasn't he?
All the flooding and
stuff
like that.
Normally in the water, I was going to say.
Yeah. They found three koi carp that were worth £2,000 in the centre circle of Brunton Park when it flooded.
In the snow?
No, in the flooding. And they returned them to the owner. That was... probably one of the biggest news stories coming out of Carlisle in like the last 3 years.
There's a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's not much going on there. Right, Football Jenga. First things first, let's talk about the last Football Jenga.
Now, any eagle-eared listeners...
And there were a few.
...will have noticed that I was disgustingly, I think is the only word to use, disallowed my answer of Tony Cruz. Because Tom said that it had already been said.
Yep.
And if you listen back, there is evidence that it wasn't said. And the corruption in the game, I think, has just gone a step too far now.
It was controversial, to say the least. There's been outrage on Twitter about it. We've had no end of messages coming in in support of Julian.
We just need VAR. That's what I said at the time.
We're still waiting for a comment from Tony.
I'm pretty sure we're still waiting for that to come back, aren't we? We're still waiting for them to actually make their mind up on it.
Podcast audio.
Yeah, it's only been 2 weeks. So.
Yeah, there's a man with a finger in his ear. We're waiting for that. But
The reason it happened is because we
do have to explain it, because it's not just me.
It wasn't. We'd done a... kind of a trial run, let's say, beforehand.
It's not a trial run if you record the entire thing.
An unintentional
trial practice, let's call it. And we did a Football Jenga that time, and we did the World Cup final.
In 2014,
Germany against Argentina. And Tony Cruz was said in that one.
Yeah.
And then we played it again, and Tony Cruz hadn't been said in the Champions League final.
And that's why it happened.
Confusion ensued.
So we're going to remove that one from my name, and it's 0-0, and we're going to start.
Anyway, I've picked a game that Tony Cruz isn't playing in. So there's a clue for you all, okay?
Narrows it down.
It's difficult, actually, this one. And one of the... Anyway, I don't need to give it too much context. I'm just going to go into it. It's the FA Cup final between Man City and Wigan. 2013.
I should notice. I've got a good mate who supports Wigan, and he never shuts up about this. So,
and the score was 1-0 to Wigan.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to start with Andrew, Julian, and then Tom.
Joe Hart.
Correct.
Ben Watson.
Correct.
Sean Maloney.
Correct.
Emerson Boyce.
Correct.
Steve McManaman.
Steve McManaman.
No, not Steve McManaman. Sorry.
Yeah, no.
Go on.
I'll give you that. Callum McManaman.
Oh, that's Steve more McManaman. Controversy.
Oh,
no, it's
Steve
fine.
McManaman. Was like 20 years
We've
ago.
We've said first names.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. It's all right. It's all right.
Right. Yaya Toure.
Correct.
Sergio Aguero.
Correct.
Kone. Aruna Kone.
Correct.
Jordi Gomez.
Correct.
Paul Sharma.
Correct. Great shout.
David Silva.
Correct.
Pablo Zabaleta.
Correct.
He actually got sent off.
This is tense.
Double points, I think.
Company, Vincent Company.
Yeah, correct.
You're a real piece of work. Oh,
Konorov.
No.
No, he's
You're
got
out. Take it. I'll take
You're
it.
Out.
His head's gone from last week, I think.
Yeah.
Right, I'm going to have to go for a punk because I'm completely out of art. I'm going to say Nastasic.
That's a great shout.
Oh,
that is unbelievable.
That's insane.
Ali Al Habsi.
No.
That's I had it written down.
The
here
keeper.
Well.
The keeper in this game.
Oh, it was
Joel.
Robles.
It is,
Joel's
yeah. Robles.
Yeah. Oh, I've won it with Nastasic, to be fair. I'll give you that.
That's a deserved win. I mean,
football Jenga,
fantastic I stuff. Well, that's football Jenga done for another week. It's quite stressful, isn't it? I'm tense here and I'm not even playing. I'm just like watching you all squirm.
I'll give you that. Well done, Tom.
But, yeah, well done, Tom. Deserved win and legal win as
legal
well.
Win
so,
fantastic.
You know, congratulations
it's good
there.
To get my first proper one on the board.
Yeah, absolutely. So that brings us to a close of the second episode of Under the Abbey Stand. It's been a pleasure, of course, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time giving you the reviews of the Carlisle and the Crawley games as well as all things Cambridge United and football. And, yeah, we look forward to it. Julian, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Tom Walker, thank
Good
you.
Good to be back.
Andrew, George, and a pleasure to have
thank you.
You
very much. Thanks for having us.